The networks came along, and Machinima was like the first one. And so all of us started making way more money than we were making before. I mean, the dough was good. That allowed me now to put a little bit more emphasis on my show, you know, and to start giving away my shift and not coming in as often. I'd always be editing behind the bar, okay? So I'd bring my computer in, my little Mac. I'm like editing videos and stuff when they're supposed to be serving customers. I was a fucking horrible bartender. And then the bar kind of called me up and they're like, Sky, you haven't been to work in the last 3 months? Aren't you doing something else? I'm like, well, yeah. She's like, okay, we can do that. You're fired, right? And I'm like, well, fuck it, I got Machinima. But a week later, Machinima calls. Yeah, we killing that program because this shit bankrupting us. We're not making any money. So I have no fucking money.
From Jump Cut, it's An Unconventional Life, a show about people that have escaped the 9-to-5. I'm Samuel Donner, and on the show today, how Sky John left his home island in Barbados to create The Tipsy Bartender. At over 30 million followers and billions of views across their platforms, The Tipsy Bartender is the most popular bartending show in the world. Since Benjamin Franklin and his pals were founding America, alcohol has been a centerpiece of American culture. But alcohol's presence really took hold of the U.S. at the turn of the 20th century. Industrial improvements turned local breweries from neighborhood watering holes to major operations. And the technology of lithography had advanced to the point where you could manufacture bright colored posters in batches large enough to send nationwide. But alcohol's heyday in the media wouldn't last. In 1920, America banned the consumption of alcohol. Eventually, in 1933, America wanted to get drunk again, and Prohibition ended. But those alcohol companies were pretty shaken up. So the alcohol industry began to self-regulate to protect itself from federal regulation. And that's the industry in which Sky has found himself. A highly regulated and securely established industry. As the biggest new media influence in alcohol, Sky has been trying to navigate this industry while simultaneously trying to understand how new media like Facebook and YouTube can comply and circumvent that regulation. But before we get into all that, we have to look at where Sky began. Life for Sky began in the small country of Barbados, as Sky looked out into a vast blue ocean.
I know when I was young, I used to climb a lot of trees. And, you know, you climb up high in the tree and look out at the horizon and just wonder what's out there. I was always curious about that. That curiosity is really what pushed me to go and explore. And I was just curious to know what was beyond the horizon. Because once you get to the high up in the tree, you can look and, you know, I wonder what was beyond that curve. Or maybe the world's flat. What was over what was over the edge? I don't know, it's always been a driving force pushing me to try to get to that point on the horizon to see what's out there.
Sky looked towards the horizon because Barbados is a small country of just 200,000 locals. When your community is that small, your potential can be stifled. And Sky had aspirations beyond his island.
I mean, you don't have all the opportunity that you guys have here. So, you know, there was no, like, football team, for instance, you know.
Yeah.
We had teams, but to really push stuff and get ahead, you have to compete with the best or be around the best. And that requires you in some ways to come to America. It's just that when you're on an island, you could only go so far.
Although Sky had dreams of America, he didn't have much direction. As is the case with most young people, Sky went through a period of self-discovery. While he was in college, he became intrigued by an interesting police initiative.
During his first year of college, they had this program called the Police Cadets, where they would train young men to stay out of trouble, you know, and become police officers.
Yeah.
So I got in on this program and wasn't too enthusiastic about being a police officer either.
Why not?
I just didn't see myself working a 9-to-5, man. I joined the police cadet program because all my friends were police cadets.
Mm.
The program's new, so the government or whoever's in charge, not really sure what they're supposed to do with us.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
What we shouldn't be doing. Police officers were taking us like on raids and like crazy fucking situations. So listen to us, all of us 16, 3 o'clock in the morning, we in the police station, you know what I mean? We were looking for some dude who, what he did, he shot someone or some drug dealer. We pull up at his house, you know, knocking on the door and all that sort of stuff. They search in the house, but the grandmother had the door locked. So you know he was in there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was fun. It was fun for like a 16-year-old to be in those situations. I mean, like, we had a good time, man. Like, we was... You couldn't mess with us. Like, how you gonna pick a fight with one of us? Because firstly, you could beat 20 of us together, so we beat the hell out of you. And then afterwards, we call the police, coming to beat you again.
Sky was having fun in the police cadets, but wasn't so sure about this as a career. Sky wanted to experiment with other careers, and he wasn't just going to settle for the first opportunity that came his way. So he looked into a career that was police adjacent. It had a lot of surface level similarities, but Sky soon found that if you dug a bit deeper, this career operated on a very different code of ethics.
I joined, I guess they could be considered the rivals. I joined like the Bahamian military. It's what we call the Defense Force.
Yeah.
And there's a professional rivalry between the two sides. Like the Defense Force doesn't like the police and the police don't like the Defense Force. There was a 3-year contract. So I was like, okay, let me do this and see where I am at the end of this.
Did you feel like you had any direction at this point? Because it seems like you're just trying things out and seeing how it goes.
No, not really. There wasn't any guiding factor. It was just, this was a steady job. So we, went into training and, you know, a few months later I was a member of the Defense Force.
Did you like it?
Yes and no. It's an interesting place. When I was in basic training, I remember Petty Officer McKinney, I think he's a distant cousin of mine, telling us, gentlemen, you can be in some situations, okay, where you can have an opportunity to better your situation by not doing something or by doing something. He was very vague with this, okay? And he's like, just remember, if you go down, don't go down for something small. Make sure you go down for something big. What I'm saying, gentlemen, is don't go down for a lobster dinner. Make sure if you go down, you go down for a lobster factory. You understand what he's trying to tell us? He wasn't encouraging us to commit a crime, but he was.
But he's like, if you do, make it a big one.
No, well. Now, why he's telling us that is because the Bahamas, historically, is a smuggler's cove. All the great smugglers have come through there. But we going back to the days of piracy, because the water in the Bahamas is beautiful, it's shallow, and has a lot of reefs, right? A lot of reefs and rocks and stuff like that. So if you don't know how to maneuver, and you're trying to chase me in your boat, and our boats are equal speed, but I notice, like, I can make a couple cuts, and you can go straight, and you can tear off the bottom of your boat. So smugglers have always taken advantage of that, going back to the days of pirates. So the pirates made the Bahamas their home. Black Bear and all the boys used to sail out of there at some point, just because navigating those waters, you gotta know it.
And it's like infused into the culture.
Right. And so that also happened with drugs. So all these smugglers passed through there. And so being on the Defense Force puts you in a situation where you can be on a boat and you can run into something. And you have to decide how you can handle that.
Yeah, because you could either say, like, oh, I'm taking you in, or accept a little bit on the side.
Right, or take something on the side. One of the first stories I was told, this happened back in the 80s. 4 officers in a speedboat stopped this dude who was loaded with drugs. And the guy said, hey, I'll give you all $1 million to let me go. So 3 of them was down, like, okay, dude, let's let this dude go. One of the dudes was born again Christian. Sucking his teeth. And so, you know, the Christian dude wasn't budging, so they took him in, okay? And I mean, you know, dude, that's a dangerous situation to be in, because imagine if you're on a boat with a bunch of dudes who stand to make enough money for them to live comfortably off for a long time.
Basically their life.
Right, and you step in the middle of that. And anyway, they took him in, and he just paid someone else. And so drugs went missing. The charts on where they found him were incorrect, and he beat the case. So he still walked free, you know? And so you have those situations, and that's the kind of situation I believe mostly he was referring to. So if you can commit a crime, make sure that crime's worth it. When you look at life through that, it changes you, because this guy was not telling us to be honest the way some people come in and be like, hey, be honest. So when you apply that phrase to life, as sick as it seems, shit, I love that expression.
I found this philosophy fascinating. It showcases the blatant corruption that Sky had to navigate in this job. When I ask if Sky enjoyed his time in the Defense Force, you can initially hear his uncertainty and the underlying discomfort inherent in participating in an intensely corrupt network. Sky wanted to do something else with his life.
I had reached my fill with the Defense Force. So here's what was happening. So I was basically an enlisted Marine, and I had the opportunity to become an officer. I'd been interviewed for officer training. And so what would happen is they would take us and then send us off to England. The Bahamas is a former British colony. Mm. And so we would train in England, navigation and all this bullshit, and then come back. And then I was just like, man, I don't want to do that, you know? Spend the rest of my life on one of these Defense Force vessels sailing around. You know, I want to do something else. And I had a boy who was working in the bank, and he's like, dude, leave. You make more money working in the bank. And you work 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. You know, you have nights and weekends off and all that.
So how was that, the banking? Was it what you hoped it would be?
Yeah, it was way more lax. Like, after you're in the military and then you go to like a civilian job, like, dude, like, that's like, wow, you know? You're free. You know what I mean?
So Sky accepted a simple life as a civilian banker. The job was stable, and to be honest, it seemed a bit boring. But Sky told me a story of an interesting opportunity that walked through the bank's doors one day.
While being in the bank, this fisherman comes in, and you could smell the money before he entered the bank. Okay? Like, his money was wet and sticky and had fish guts on it. And so none of the girls wanted to serve him. So I was like, okay, let me serve you. I remember he couldn't read. He could only sign an X. Why he couldn't read is because when he was supposed to be going to school, he would go fishing. Mm. All he would do was fish, fish, fish. You know, I mean, so this dude knew the ocean. I mean, fucking amazing, man. One day he was in the bank and he's like, hey, if you want to go fishing with me, man, just show up. I was like, okay, I'm coming Saturday. He's like, yeah, come. Assuming that I wouldn't come. This dude in a bike and a necktie, I showed up. I jump in the boat and, you know, we go out. And he's like, well, I tell you what, you know, if you won't go again, thinking that I can come back. And dude, I kept showing up. I became part of it. So every weekend I'd go fishing with him. This dude was making money. The director of the bank, his salary was over 6 figures, I'm assuming. But my boy, who couldn't read, the fisherman, was making more than him. Money was an issue to him the way it is to most of us. You know, like, you might be sitting there going, wait a minute now, how much money I can make this week? I gotta make rent, I gotta do this. His money just in the water. All he has to do is jump on a boat and go pick it up. Yeah. And talking to him, I wanted to become a fisherman. So his goal was, he was gonna buy a bigger boat and we could take longer trips and make more money.
Did you see that opportunity? It was like, oh, we should like go for it. And like,
but that's why I pushed him to buy a bigger boat.
Yeah.
And so then I started taking navigation classes to get my captain's license and all that. And so right at the moment now where he's supposed to buy the bigger boat and I quit the bank, the dude's like, hey, Sky, I want to build a house. I changed my mind about buying a bigger boat.
Was that disappointing for you?
Yeah, but I mean, like, you can't put all your hopes and aspirations and dreams into one person.
The entrepreneurial opportunity gave Sky a taste of what his life could be like if he had complete freedom. But he still wasn't sure how he could have that freedom. That was until he was reading a newspaper.
There was an ad in the paper. They were looking for comedians for this club called Joker's Wild. So I went out and tried out. Once every 2 weeks, they let me on stage. And I took it.
And did you like it?
I bombed almost every single time. Yeah, but I kept going. I kept going.
Why did you keep going if you're bombing every single time?
I don't know, because you have to keep going until you get good. I mean, out of all the times I've been on stage, maybe like one or two worked out, you know? Yeah. You just got to get the jokes right and kind of figure out who you are. And so once that fishing deal came to an end, I was like, all right, fuck it. I'm going to America to be a stand-up comedian and an actor.
Whoa, wait. That seems like a total, like, 180.
Scott quit his job at the bank, got a student visa, and traveled to America to get his associate's degree in business administration. The student stuff was just to get into America. His real passion was acting. But the acting wasn't exactly paying the bills, so he had to find work doing something else.
Once I had the immigration thing sorted out, I got into bartending and...
So was bartending a way for you to support your aspirations as a comedian? Yeah.
You know, none of us wanted to be a bartender. Like, that's a job. Like, you're a musician or you're an actor or a stand-up comedian. Yeah. It's mostly to pay the bills. Yeah. Bartenders and servers.
While Sky was working at the bar, he was using stand-up to break into acting. And it was working, to an extent. He was booking commercials but couldn't break into mainstream Hollywood.
One of the biggest impediments to me, like, really breaking into Hollywood was my voice.
Yeah.
I couldn't sound, like, authentically American. And that really helped me back in a lot of situations. The minute I go to an audition, the casting director says, "Hey, where are you from?" I knew I'm screwed.
Were you trying to hide it at that point?
I would try to mask it depending on the role. But like now, like I walk in and I talk the way I talk. You know what I mean? If you don't like it, too bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean that's the beauty of the internet, like.
You realized that this was holding you back, and so you ended up making your own pilot, right? So how did that idea come around?
Because I had an idea for a talk show. This is like 2007, just the early days of YouTube.
Yeah.
So the two most popular people in the news were Bill O'Reilly and Howard Stern. So I merged the two personalities. We called it the Sky John Show, and we started pumping out episodes. And what that allowed me to do is to speak the way I wanted to speak. I didn't have to... change my pronunciation for anyone.
I love this. Sky saw that the established system wasn't valuing his talent, so he created an opportunity for himself through YouTube. But this was the early, early days of YouTube, and content creators had essentially no idea what YouTube would condone. Sky had a strained relationship with YouTube, to say the least.
You started making these episodes. Did you get any traction? Like, what was happening?
Yeah, I mean, people were watching and laughing and, some people offended. It all depends. So it was a good time. But this is the early days of YouTube, so my content was considered too risque. At that time, I was taking a lot of heat. I would get a lot of threats about your content and deleting your channel and all this shit. Yeah.
Sky's channel was constantly in hot water, but he still navigated the platform and found success.
I was in Berlin, and I see girls on the street, and I realize, wait a minute, they're so forward with this that this must be legal. And that's when I realized that prostitution was legal in Germany. And so I saw one of the girls, and I was like, hey, do you mind if I interview you? And she's like, okay. And so ran back to the hotel, grabbed my camera, set it up on the streets, and talked to her. But see, the way I would talk to a prostitute, I wouldn't judge.
You did that interview. What did you expect from that, like putting it up?
Nothing much. I just uploaded it. It wasn't looking for anything crazy, and it
worked.
And
then what happened?
It went a little viral.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, I cannot tell you how many people from around the world called me trying to find that girl.
Really?
Yeah. Like, where was she? What street? You know what I mean?
So how many views did that video get?
That channel is no longer in existence.
Yeah.
But when I took that down, it was probably like close to 13 million hits or something.
Wow. Yeah. It's crazy. And like the thing is, like, you had just like created this channel, and then it like blew up kind of quickly.
I mean back in the day, in the early days of Sky John, our channel was definitely one of the top channels on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
We were solid. It's just that YouTube had a vision that did not include like that kind of content.
Right.
So I got knocked out. And that's how I ended up with Tipsy Bartender.
It sucks that YouTube's vision didn't align with Sky's content, especially because Sky was getting a lot of traction. People loved his content, but YouTube didn't. And YouTube was very much the gatekeeper at that point. To protect his position as a content creator, Sky had to make some drastic changes to his content.
You had these two channels, and then you started to want to try out different styles of content, yeah?
YouTube's pissed, so bartending was a safe way out. I started making bartending videos on Sky John, And then a friend at the time was like, why don't you just start a bartending channel? So I did. I started Tipsy Bartender. Tipsy Bartender started November 2010. That's when I started the channel. And I'd put up a video once every 2 weeks. It wasn't taken seriously until probably like 2012. Uh-huh. I had a girlfriend and she was like, you know, you should focus on Facebook. And so that's how I ended up on Facebook.
And how did Facebook differ from YouTube?
More people on Facebook than on YouTube.
Of course, yeah.
A lot of people might not know that. Because I'd post a lot of drink pictures and they just dug it. And it really became like this community.
When did you realize you had that kind of community around drinks?
As the numbers began to grow on Facebook, you know, as you go from a few thousand to a few million people in a short space of time, you know?
Yeah. Were you like really excited? Because that's incredible growth. They go from 1,000 to a couple million people.
Yeah, but it's not monetized. You have to figure out how to monetize that. And see, that's one of the things that I think I lacked in the beginning in terms of realizing how to monetize your audience. I think everyone realizes now that you can't necessarily depend on Facebook or YouTube to pay you. You have to do things outside. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't doing that back then.
Yeah.
There were a handful of guys who understood real early on that we got to monetize these people. But that's just something. I mean, because, you know, you're just making videos, man. Like, yeah. I don't want to come to you and be like, hey, give me $1.
Yeah.
Hey, give me $2. Hey, dude, I hate asking the audience for money, even when we needed it. But you kind of have to do that to keep things going.
While Tipsy Bartender was growing, Sky still was working his bartending job. And he had a rough time trying to balance a growing online presence with a job.
I'd always be editing behind the bar, okay? So I'd bring my computer in, my little Mac. And, you know, if it's slow, dude, I'm like editing videos and stuff when they're supposed to be serving customers. I was a fucking horrible bartender. Networks came along, and Machinima was like the first one. And so all of us started making way more money than we were making before. I mean, the dough was good. That allowed me now to even go focus more on this and to start giving away my shift and not coming in as often. And then the bar kind of called me up and they're like, Sky, you haven't been to work in the last 3 months? And I'm like, yeah, no. I love the company. Okay. I'll be in. Okay. I'm coming in tomorrow. You know, I'm there. She's like, aren't you doing something else? I'm like, well, yeah. She's like, okay, we can do that. You're fired, right? So I got fired, and I'm like, well, fuck it. I got Machinima.
Yeah.
Dude, but a week later, Machinima calls. Yeah, we killing that program because this shit bankrupting us. We're not making any money. I said, I have no fucking money. It's okay.
So what did you do? Like, how did you
triple down on what I was already doing?
Yeah.
So, you know, just go harder at Tipsy Bartender until it worked out.
Sky's safety net was gone. His only option was to build Tipsy Bartender and work harder to make the channel a success. And it was working. Sky was getting millions of followers and was creating a profitable business that stemmed from his channel. Some of this success can be attributed to Sky's shift from YouTube to Facebook. As Sky focused more on Facebook, he rapidly accelerated the growth of his channel while simultaneously maximizing his revenue. However, relying on revenue from a singular platform can jeopardize a business because your business is subject to the whims of that platform. This is especially true of a platform like Facebook, whose content policies are constantly evolving. A few years after Sky shifted focus to Facebook, the platform underwent an evolution that massively impacted Sky's ability to make money.
I was heavily focused on Facebook. We would publish like third-party content. As you look down the ads on the page, they'd split that ad revenue with us. And that's how most Facebookers lived at that time. In early 2018, Facebook was like, hey, we're no longer allowing that kind of content. That was our primary source of income. Not just for me, dude. It was a lot of us.
Yeah.
And everybody got freaking screwed. All those companies went out of business.
Did you feel yourself like scrambling to replace that income?
Yeah, because I mean, Tipsy Bartender is not just me. I have other people working with me, you know? I wasn't running this necessarily as the next Fortune 500 company. I was running, you know, we have fun, we make videos. You can't really do that. You really have to focus on the business aspect of things because things go sideways, you're screwed. So you need to make sure your revenue streams are right and you continue to grow and build stuff out. And that experience kind of taught me that.
Yeah.
And that's when I opened up a lot more to trying to monetize the audience in different ways. Here's another thing that affects me money-wise. Alcohol is heavily fucking regulated, man. And so I'm constantly under fire for some aspect of what it is that I do.
Yeah.
For instance, like Facebook, the whole alcohol thing, because they're new to this video business, you know, we're still trying to figure out like what's allowed, what's not allowed. In terms of my own alcohol, that's something we looked at, but it takes a long time to truly build a brand.
But don't you already have, you have a brand that's
yeah,
built?
No,
you have
no, like I get that. I get that.
Millions of followers.
We do have millions of followers, but there've been multiple opportunities to do an alcohol, but it got to be right. Yeah, like I said, that's something that's on the back burner. It's not dead. It's something we've thought about. Liquor is a tricky one when you reach out to businesses. Some brands might not necessarily be comfortable with the way we are. Like we're definitely party heavy.
Yeah.
I might want a more mature experience. Yeah, whatever the fuck. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. Alcohol is heavily fucking regulated, man. There's so many rules. One of the easiest things you could come up with would be like, okay, Sky, why don't you do like a liquor box where you send like, it's a subscription service and we send you samples every month. Okay. But you can't ship alcohol to every single state. Every community has their own rules as to how alcohol is governed.
Yeah.
So if I had to do it again, would alcohol be, I don't know, maybe I'm good at it, so maybe, but.
It seems like there's this interesting dilemma where you become the leader, you know, you're the number one bartending channel in the world or show in the world, right? You've gotten to the peak of this industry, but is it like you're realizing like the industry is just really hard to work with?
Yeah, extremely hard to work with. And then my content's also an issue because the liquor industry loves mixology. Mixology is the dudes maybe with the aprons, with the fancy pours and the very specialty drinks. That's not what we do. I'm more of like your backyard, your typical everyday bullshit bartender. And that attitude has put us at odds with a lot of the industry as well. Mixologists, it's going to be tough for them to ever get to this level because that shit is weird. That appeals to this small group of people.
But it doesn't necessarily appeal to the masses.
Right.
Yeah.
We appeal to the masses. And I, trust me, I stay under fucking fire from these motherfuckers.
What do they do?
Everything you could fucking think of, dude. Like, I live under the gun with some of these guys, you know? But, I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, you'd see comments, our drinks are garbage, you know, they're not well balanced. Listen, here's my mentality so that everyone can understand this once and for all. People don't drink alcohol for the taste. If you believe people drink alcohol for the taste, you're out of your fucking mind. Okay? Alcohol tastes like shit. Now, a lot of people listen to this and be like, no, that's not true. Alcohol tastes delicious. You've acquired a taste for alcohol. I understand that. I understand that people drink alcohol because they intend to have fun. That's why they say, you know, have a nightcap, take the edge off and stuff like that. And, you know, this guy might like the taste of this one better than this one, but that still don't mean that what he's drinking tastes good. Because trust me, if alcohol did not get you tipsy, who would drink it?
For someone who's built a business around alcohol, Sky isn't confident in the longevity of the industry.
I can tell the industry something if anyone in the industry actually listening to this. We all fucked because AI and automation are coming, right? Automation already starting to take a lot of a job from a lot of bartenders. Okay, but there's a chemical reaction that happens when you take alcohol to make you feel the way you do. Okay, what happens when someone in tech figures out that relationship and you're able to get that same effect without having to drink alcohol? Because that's one of the things that I see coming. It's going to be a game changer because if you could get tipsy without drinking alcohol, who would drink it? No fucking body. Because I mean, a glass of juice tastes better than a beer. I mean, alcohol, the industry would end. And I honestly believe that we could see that happen in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
It's almost a given. So I look at the liquor industry as being in some serious trouble.
Yeah.
And most guys don't share my opinion. They look at me like I'm crazy. But remember now, who's the dominant person in this industry in social media? Me.
Sky voices a consistent distrust of this industry. He talks about YouTube being critical of his content, Facebook pulling monetization, mixologists hating on his content, brands unable to sponsor videos, national regulations impeding business expansion. Basically a whole slew of problems. So I had to ask the question, for someone who takes issue with so many aspects of the alcohol industry, do you even like it?
I guess my question is like, do you like where you found yourself? Because like you are in a sense like freer than you were when you were like working at the bank, but there's also a lot of responsibilities that come with that, like the escape from the 9 to 5. So how do you feel about where you are? Like you're at the pinnacle of your industry. How does it feel being there?
I mean, it's good, but getting here is only half the battle, though. The real battle is staying here, because a lot of dudes would love to dethrone me by any means necessary, you know? And every day we have to wake up and figure out how do we retain this title and actually increase our lead. And it's tough, you know, there's a lot of competition out there. I see some channels coming up on YouTube doing big stuff.
Finally, I asked what advice Sky had for you guys, the people listening to this podcast.
And the last question I like to ask is like, what advice would you give to someone that is thinking about leaving their 9 to 5 for something that they've like always wanted to pursue, some kind of like dream? What would you tell that person?
I would say do it yesterday, okay? Because I don't know what you do, and I can sound crazy, but automation and artificial intelligence are coming for your fucking job. So if you can leave, leave now. And I realize you're probably sitting there going, is he nuts? They can't replace me. If you're saying that, you're probably going to be the next one to go. I'm totally... Okay, so go do what you want to do right now. Don't wait, because your job's probably going to leave you if you don't leave it.
Sky's ending advice seems a tad bit apocalyptic, but I wouldn't be so immediately dismissive. Sky is the most influential alcohol channel on the internet. And with that influence, he has tapped into the world of alcohol more than almost any other person. His apocalyptic predictions remind me of a quote from Elon Musk.
Like technology and technology awareness, if there was like a topological map of technology awareness, it's mostly flat with a few short buildings and then some very tall spires, very tall spires. And unless you're on that very tall spire, it's not obvious what the topology is.
It seems as though Sky might be one of those spires for the alcohol industry, and maybe he is seeing what is coming in the far-off distance way before everyone else. That being said, I think we can learn a lot from Sky that we can apply before the eventual AI apocalypse. Sky has had an intense curiosity his whole life. From his beginnings looking out to the horizon to being unsatisfied with job after job, he kept searching until he found something that enraptured him. He found that in content creation and YouTube, and he made a career out of it. I think this shows that it's okay to dabble. It's okay to shift careers. You have to shift careers, and you have to shift focus to really find what you love. And I think Sky is the perfect example of that. So I guess what I'm trying to say is be ready for change. And I have a challenge for you, but first, let me share some responses from last episode about what people are grateful for.
Hi, Samuel. My name is Kim Tatori. I'm calling from Eva Beach, Hawaii. I recently listened to the podcast with Caitlin. If I can push through and get to the green level, then I hopefully will be the first Mariko No consultant here on Oahu. So I just had to reach out and say thank you, thank you. I just had to say I'm thankful for your podcast. Okay, bye, aloha.
Hi, my name is Ashley Moon, and I just heard your new podcast with Caitlin Roberts. It was awesome, and I'm super grateful that I happened to get an email to go and listen to it. I left my secretary's job almost a decade ago to start my own organizing business. But yeah, thanks so much.
Hi, I'm calling. I just listened to the podcast, and I was told to give call this number of what I'm grateful for. One, I'm grateful for listening to this podcast because it really brought some insight into how a book can change your life and put you on a path that you might not have thought. So thank you to Junkut and to the host, Samuel Donner, and to Caitlin. I really enjoyed it. Thank you both.
Hey, Sam. I just listened to your podcast. It was amazing, really. It's the second time that I hear about this book. And it was an inspiring podcast and very interesting to hear about. And you said to give you a call. And that's what I do. I tell you what I'm grateful for. Two things came to my mind, basically, that two very good teachers, that these two teachers have done the highest quality of education that I've received in any form in my life. That's about it. Awesome podcast. Keep it up. You have a great voice. Very, very good to listen to. So keep it up. All the best.
Thank you guys so much for the responses and for supporting the podcast. This is the last episode of this season, but you can find me on Instagram at Samuel Donner. And if you want more stuff like this, I actually host another podcast called Finding Founders, and we'll be posting new episodes very soon. Hope to see some of you guys there. Please leave 5 stars if you enjoyed, and also tell me what you liked about this episode and a change that you want to make in your life. It could be anything from a diet to a career, and it's super easy to leave an answer. Just call me at 310-853-2538. Again, that's 310-853-2538, or email me at samuel@jumpcut.com. Seriously, do it. I'm just a phone call or email away. Again, that's 310-853-2538. Just tell me what changes you want to make to your life.